Welcome to Unapologetically Asian, the place where we talk about navigating through adulthood as Asian Australians. Today you're joined by Twee,
Tiana,
Mayank,
and Sunny.
A common thread amongst our community is that we tend to bottle up how we feel, and in effect it can cause detrimental impacts to our mental health. That's where the bantering trio, Mayank Sahani, Sunny Buhagana, and Ujwal Chaudhary come in. Today we are joined by two-thirds of the voices behind the mic of Bottled Up, a men's mental health podcast that aims to create a platform for individuals to share their stories in the hopes of inspiring others to do the same. We talk about the cultural and gender nuances that underpin mental health, toxic masculinity, and just have an all-round legendary time with the lads. Here's Mayank and Sunny from Bottled Up. But before we start, we just wanted to give a trigger warning because in this episode, we will be touching upon subjects such as suicide and anxiety. We highly recommend that you seek a mental health professional if you need the help, and we will be leaving those important links in our show notes below.
Alrighty, welcome to the show, everyone. Thank you for listening in today. As you have heard from the intro today, we are joined by Mayank and Sunny from Bottled Up.
Woo-hoo. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us. I think this is the Sunny. Is this the first time we've actually been a guest on a podcast?
Yeah, you and I. It's a dangerous duo. So I hope Twee and Tiana are prepared.
Literally, I know you guys had just heard the intro from me, but we have been attempting this intro for the past like 10 minutes. Tiana's been so giggly this giggly. Time.
Tiana, what are you doing, man? Seriously,
you guys just make me so nervous.
Mank, I'll let what you take I that say? One.
And that's a lie. It's actually been 4 minutes, guys. So
4 minutes, yeah.
Not 10 minutes.
Okay. Whatever.
Bit of GST added onto that.
bit of mayonnaise sauce, yeah.
Oh Jesus!
But away we go. We are on the air. We're actually also missing a third member of Bottled Up. Ujwal just decided he just didn't want to be here. Fair enough.
Perfect day for a run.
No, we actually have a joke with Ujwal. Like, whenever we don't know what he's doing, we're always just like, yeah, he's on a run. He's going for a run.
Light jog.
He loves a run, that man. Yeah, light jog.
Yeah, for 40Ks.
Just light jog. Light 40Ks. Well, thank you so much for spending your Saturday afternoon with us, Mayank and Sunny. The reason why we have these lovely lads on the podcast is because we've been big fans of their work. They started Bottled Up around the same time we started Unapologetically Asian, actually. And it is an amazing podcast for an amazing cause, all about mental health and starting those conversations, but from a male perspective, which is something that we haven't ever seen before. So we'll let you guys take the floor and tell us a bit about Bottled Up. Tell us a bit about yourselves.
Glad we have listeners, Mank. Glad we have listeners.
Yeah, no, it's so weird because like we're so used to hosting a podcast, and we're so used to like seeing all our questions that we're going to ask and stuff. And now it's just like, it's so weird to see from that different perspective now, like being a guest, like, but yeah, no, I think, yeah, Bottled Up is, I think I was actually looking back at our meeting, Sunny. We have like, we store our meeting minutes in the, in a Google Drive. We're very organized. We're an organized bunch of individuals.
Attach it to the Trello ticket as well.
Yeah, a bit of Trello. Our first meeting actually around Bottled Up was on the 6th of March, so in 2020. Mm. So I remember it was actually a really tough week for me in particular because unfortunately one of my colleagues that I worked with at NAB, I knew him for about eight to ten months, I think, and he passed away. And that was, a really sad time because it was a massive shock. He was young. He was literally like our age. And, I remember the last time that, I spoke to him was at a Christmas party. I remember I just said something to him like, oh, I'll see you when you get back from Europe. He was going to Europe at the time. And unfortunately, that never happened. And, I think, I was sort of told Sunny and Ujwal how I was feeling, and they sort of unburdened themselves as well about some of the stuff that they were going through. And I even spoke to some people at the employee assistance program at EY. They mentioned that bottling things up was a very big thing amongst a lot of males, and I thought, what a good way to start a name for the podcast or for the idea. And I think we sort of started in March, and we were sort of thinking about what we can do. Originally, actually, Sunny, correct me if I'm wrong, but we were actually thinking of getting into schools and communities at the start to try and have that tangible kind of impact in the mental health space.
Then COVID came.
COVID was it was a weird one, because I think during COVID, mental health was on the top of everyone's mind. It was a very like a, it was a very sort of topical discussion. And so, we thought that, you know, what can we do during COVID that can help people with their mental health? And we thought, you know what, podcasting is something which is growing. It has very low barriers to entry. Like, we can just pick up a mic and start recording, similar to how you guys would have started. And yeah, we just thought that, you know, like, if someone who, you know, if someone who is generally an introvert, and who doesn't really speak about their mental health issues, they can potentially go in and plug in a conversation and listen to a conversation that we've had with someone who's experienced mental health issues, and potentially draw inspiration from that conversation, and hopefully, you know, open up to their own family, friends, and loved ones. So, yeah, it's our mission is very simple. It's just to destigmatize mental health, and it's really weird because mental health is it's a really weird kind of topic where, you know, it's a medically diagnosable issue, but it also has cultural connotations as well and social connotations. Mm. It's like a really weird mixture between the two, and even though we don't have any sort of medical background in this space, we thought that, you know, if we can try and create an environment where people want to open up about their mental health issues, this is the space to do it. So. In a nutshell, that's a brief history of Bottled Up. If you have anything to add to that.
No, I think you nailed it quite well. Yeah, like, we're an initiative, we focus on men's mental health, and I think the way we try and do it is through storytelling. Anytime we get a guest on board, it's, you know, what's your story, and to share your story in a very authentic way, because when someone's listening to it, they can see parts of their own story listening to a guest. And I think that's the thing that like gives us a smile, because one of the things, or a couple of the things that we want people to walk away from after listening to a podcast, is realizing that they're not alone, that there's someone else that's gone through something similar, and they can see parts of their own story in that. The other thing is like a sense of hope, like a sense that, you know, you can actually get through to the other end, you can take action. And then the third thing is very much like, if you're not going through something, which not all the time, we're not always going through something at every point in time, it's about having empathy and seeing parts of someone's story in, you know, close friends or family members. Because even though we haven't gone through something directly, there's something we can learn from someone's story that a close friend has probably gone through. So yeah, podcasting, very, very easy. And I think it was just a way of like, actually, Mayank, to be honest, we thought it was easy. Then we got behind the mic and it took us like 6 hours to record like a 20-minute segment.
Yeah. I was literally going to say the same thing. Like, it's not as simple. And like, we even spent 6 months, like even just planning the idea and, you know, getting... just like you're getting behind the mic and sort of researching about podcasts and marketing and like where we wanted to take it. We took like 6 months just to come up with the idea and actually implement it. So yeah, it was pretty hard, but we got there in the end.
Yeah. Well, I guess like the idea of storytelling itself, it's a skill that has to be learned, because not everything is, you know, because you wanted to make it as engaging as possible for the listener and get, you know, XYZ points across. And that takes skill, because you kind of like chuck in everything on a podcast. You have to be able to understand what's worth talking about, what's not. And then the whole editing process afterwards as well is another ball game. It's a lot.
Yeah, don't get us started on that one.
It's funny because we have like a 50-minute conversation and then we spend like double the amount of time.
Is modest. More like quadruple. We have to edit. Usually, to put a disclaimer out there, it's usually the guest that can speak really well. It's usually like Meg, I, or Ujwal that just like look back and listen to ourselves and we're like, what the heck were we thinking when we were saying that?
I think you guys need to give yourselves a bit more credit, because based off the last, you know, 5-minute spiel that you guys have given us, it's been amazing. So you guys are really good speakers.
That's right. First impressions. It goes downhill from here.
It's a very, very negative slope.
Negative gradient.
I guess the question I kind of wanted to ask off the back of that is that you guys have had the opportunity to speak to heaps of people and learn about different stories, different backgrounds and all that stuff, and hear about people's different journeys through mental health. I guess now that you've had more insight into the different perspectives from all those different type of backgrounds, what's like the most profound thing that you've learned about mental health so far? Like, has your perspective on mental health changed from when you guys first started the podcast to now? Now that you've listened to all these different stories?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think like firstly that, you know, knowing that it's a medical issue as well as a social, like, kind of issue as well. Mm,
yeah, you did talk about that.
I think that that's definitely one. I think another thing as well, like, one of the things was I, just reflecting back a bit about my, from my personal experiences, you know, I had anxiety when I was, like, you know, for quite a while. And when I sort of researched anxiety, like, when I was going through it, like, I saw a story of a guy who had gone through, like, anxiety and depression for, like, 12 years. And, like, that really, really scared me. Like, I think that's probably the last time I actually cried. I was just like, you know, it's pretty hard to kind of deal with. Like, I don't want to go through this for, like, you know, 12 years. And just the thought of that was just, you know, pretty scary. But then I think Sunny, you and I actually, the sort of the tide kind of turned for me when Sunny and I spoke to a guy called Ash Judd. He was a military officer who served in Afghanistan and he suffered from PTSD. And one of his key messages was that you can actually live a very, like, rich and fulfilling life, even having gone through, like, mental health issues. It's more about, like, what you make of your time after you've gone through what you've gone through and what you do with your life, which is what's important. It's like Harry Potter, and Dumbledore always says, like, it's your choices that make you, like, who you are. So if we choose to...
Sorry to interrupt. Can you say that again in a Dumbledore
oh,
voice?
Oh, my God. Oh, it's embarrassing. All right. It is your choices, Harry. It's not like, I don't know. Yeah.
Very good.
It is our choices, Harry. So it's like, yeah, like, it's our choices that define us. And Sunny and myself, like, our choices to put like, mental health content out there and learn more about people's stories. And yeah, that's what's important to us. And that's definitely a key learning for me. You can have a very rich and fulfilling life, even on the other side of your own personal experiences.
Mm. No, I agree with that. And I feel like for me, I feel like mental health has been quite a, like, strong storyline growing up. I grew up in a family just with a single mum, obviously in a South Asian background as well, which has its own stigma attached to that. I grew up in an environment where I played football for 10 years. It was quite masculine, very kind of macho, get on the field, kind of just smash the other team and, like, you know, all the things that come with that. But I don't think I necessarily had the language to express myself growing up. And I think the more I've been involved, and especially, like, the conversations you and I have been having, Mayank, Ujwal as well, like, I feel like our conversations on mental health have changed quite a bit. Like, the language we use in the last year and a half has changed quite a bit. And I think when I sit down with a guest, I realize, hang on, you've articulated that quite well, and I see parts of my story in the way you've articulated that. So I think the biggest learning for me there has been, actually, it's a lot of, like, again, I'm sure we're probably going to be touching on it, like, men and expressing themselves. They feel emotions, like, we all feel emotions, but it's having the language to express that in an articulate way or in a way that makes sense to us that I think is how we can start communicating. And mental health doesn't discriminate at all. Like, all of us go through it. Just like we break a bone or I don't know, like, get, like, mini frostbites in, like, the snow or whatever it is. Like, these are things you can see. And I think the thing about mental health is you can't see it at all. Like, it's very much a silent killer. And all of us have our own story, whether we believe that or not. I think all of us have a story that we look back at and we're like, yeah, this has defined us in some way.
That's true. Oh my gosh, I really resonate with that a lot. Just finding the language to even express yourself in the first place. Like, that wasn't readily available, you know, 2-3 years ago, and now it's like, yes, you know, I see so many posts that talk about mental health, and it's like, okay, cool, I'm able to express myself and say how I'm feeling or describe how I'm feeling to my friends and family using this sort of language so that they understand how like what I'm trying to get at. Oh, that's so true.
Yeah. And it's add on that as well, I think, like, I was reading a book called 1984. I'm not sure if you guys have read that.
George Orwell.
Yeah. And it's really funny because Sunny and I were literally talking about this when we were preparing for the pod, and we were like, the basic premise of the book is around language and how it can, like, influence the way you think. So in that totalitarian, like, society that 1984 was set in, like, the government would control the language of the citizens, and they would take out the words like rebellion and all that stuff, you know, that would inspire people to rebel against the government. And if they were to control that kind of language, it would also control people's actions inadvertently. Mm. And an interesting thing about that you mentioned there about, like, mental health and language is, like, even though, you know, that language might not be there, the fact that people are still actually thinking about mental health and experiencing mental health issues, it just goes back to the point, like, you know, it is a very serious, like, also medical kind of innate problem that's within, like, a lot of people. And just the fact that we're all kind of living in our own bubbles, you know, and not really sharing that at the moment, and that's what we've sort of find in the culture at the moment in terms of opening up, you know, people can sort of feel isolated and lonely.
It's a good point, because it's like, I don't know if you guys have felt this as well, like the more you've been involved within the space of mental health, the more you've been able to like understand the emotions you're feeling. Like when mental health is not part of your vernacular to begin with, it's kind of like, oh, what is this that I'm feeling? Like you can't really articulate it, but the more, like at least in like the last year and a half, doing more podcasts, being more involved in the space, learning more about depression, anxiety, panic attacks or whatever it might be, and the behaviors that come out of that trauma in a way, you're able to attach language to that, and you're, hang on a second, I can feel that a lot more than I used to. So it's quite interesting.
I guess a lot of that ties back to how you're feeling and emotions and all that. And I think this is totally, totally stereotyped, but it could hold some truth in what form, whatnot. When we think about gender, like when we put it back to gender, so a lot of females, I feel like females are more open to talking about their emotions and stuff, whereas males, not so much. So do you guys think that there's, we talk about mental health from a male perspective and your podcast is all about that. What sort of stereotypes do you think hold true in terms of gender when it comes to mental health?
In terms of gender, like I think toxic masculinity definitely plays a role in that in some sense. Because I think toxic masculinity, we always feel like toxic masculinity sits above, like as a broader umbrella for mental health. So it goes to toxic masculinity, and then as a branch of toxic masculinity and like an effect of toxic masculinity is mental health. Related issues, and it has many like other areas, you know, with toxic masculinity. It's like, you know, it can lead to domestic violence, misogyny, and mental health, I think, is definitely, and self-care is definitely one of those branches. So in terms of a cause, 100% there's definite gendered based stuff. I think, you know, with toxic masculinity, I think, you know, it's this idea of, you know, that you're sort of living by the male stereotype or archetype that's been created over the years and live up to that, those ideals of, you know, I think Sunny touched on it before, you know, being that macho stoic guy who doesn't need help from anyone else. That kind of mindset can lead to multiple different things. Learning about those things, I think there's some really good organizations at the moment like Man Up and Man Cave who talk a lot about toxic masculinity that are doing some incredible work in this space. And I think like it's particularly sort of going back to males mental health, I think like not being able to open up and share your own like story with your friends and loved ones because of that perceived stigma that might create within them. And even looking at it more from a cultural lens as well, I think like I was actually reading an article as well around from the World Economic Forum around mental health within Southeast Asian countries, in particular India. They went to and they surveyed 8 cities in India, and I think it was around 3,000 people, and about 47% of them highlighted that there was a stigma associated with mental health issues. And I think around 25% thought that there was something, they even went even further than that. I think it was like they thought that, you know, these people were crazy if they had mental health issues. And there were like 27% of people actually thought that, which was really like, it's absurd to hear. So I think I've sort of gone off topic there, but I think like, you know, culture, there's gender and also culture, which is super, super important, I think, to think about. There's so many different overlays.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, like, I think especially with boys, like toxic masculinity, what you mentioned, Mayank, I think has been very culturally ingrained in our society. And this idea around like personal disclosure, problem talk, I might be completely wrong, but I see women do that really well. But I don't see men coming to like other men sharing their problems, because often that's seen as like you're being feminine or you're being not so manly or whatever it might be. And that's where phrases like man up come into the picture, where it's like you sharing your emotion is seen as like unmanly. You're not stoic. You're not actually a man. And then when you put the overlay of like, you know, being South Asian, being a man, all these different overlays, it becomes a very complex issue to start breaking down. See some wonderful organizations like the Man Cave, Man Up, all these other organizations that come into the picture. And what they're trying to do is trying to show that this actually holds a very practical purpose in groups, like getting boys to start sharing. Like that is very practical. That's how we start feeling close. It's like, even if you go back to like tribal days as well, like this is how we've been designed to share, to be vulnerable. And one of the most favorite quotes I have is like, vulnerability creates more vulnerability. And it's like the fact that all of us can be vulnerable creates that open space. It creates like a sense of trust in the circle where other men can also, you know, share their emotions or share what they're going through. So there's been great progress, but yeah, like toxic masculinity, massive like Yeah, it's a massive space. I think there's like a lot of things that are very negative about it, obviously, and a lot of the societal impacts that it can have when it's not identified at like a young age, especially with like the acts of aggression, the acts of like sexual violence, all these predatory type of behaviors that sort of get put on a pedestal that come out later in life. And I think that's where we need to start targeting these behaviors at a younger age before it comes sort of, yeah, much worse than what it is. And it's already in quite a bad place.
Yeah, because it's like pretty hard to unlearn that type of behavior, isn't it? Like, if especially if that's been the narrative for so long. Before you guys both touched on your backgrounds and spoke about how culture and gender do intersect when it comes to mental health and how that conversation comes about, can you tell us a bit about how you both grew up and I guess the conversations that you had around topics like mental health and also around like, you know, whether you had siblings and whether you found that different genders were treated differently and how that kind of had or played an impact in how you perceived mental health and toxic masculinity?
So my upbringing, we didn't really talk about mental health. So I am obviously from like an Indian background, single mum from like the age I was about like 12 or 13. So that's always played a big part. And I think it's been quite complex because one, like my parents, like mum at least, didn't really have the same education that we're getting at the moment. Like topics around like mental health wasn't something that gets spoken about much. And so in one part, I feel like Bottled Up is about that educational piece, or what we're doing, even this conversation, is like, how do we start creating capacity? And how do you knowledge share, and how do you get other, like, this is what inspires other people to start sharing as well. But yeah, going back to that, like growing up, didn't really speak about mental health so much. I've got a younger brother who's about 5 or 6 years younger than I am. And I think at a young age, like obviously with dad not being in the picture, I had to be the one that kind of stepped up and take on that responsibility as like a pseudo father figure in the house and sort of man up in different ways. And I think part of that was just in reaction to like not knowing what else to do. Like I just felt that that was the right thing to do in that time. But as I grow up, I realized that, yeah, the conversations have changed, like especially being involved with Bottled Up in like the last year and a bit, like the conversations with my brother have been a lot more like open. Like we both just like every night before we sleep, he sleeps at like some ridiculous time sometimes, like 1 or 2 a.m. and I don't know what he does. Yeah, he's probably chatting to some some girl on TikTok. But yeah, like literally every night we just like chill out for like 20 minutes. He's like, he comes into my room, sits on my chair, and then I'm usually just like laying in bed, just chatting and stuff. And we just start talking about different things that are going on in our life. And I feel like that has been a combination of just like being more present within the space and being more present with him. And I'm starting to make that a more conscious thing. But yeah, again, I guess coming back to that South Asian part, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why it becomes such a complex issue. One, the educational piece, like, you know, our parents, our grandparents know much about what's going on. So I feel like the onus is sometimes maybe with us to start building that knowledge. Two, there's like a lack of
it yet.
Yeah, they didn't have the language at all. Yeah, exactly. There's like a piece around like lack of acknowledgement, like the fact that they just don't acknowledge it in the first place makes you want to like second guess it sometimes, like am I actually feeling sad? And often I think not being able to acknowledge it quite early on has very like, it can have very negative repercussions later in life, because it can come out in very different ways. Like you see it come out in like drug abuse, alcohol abuse, which are so prevalent within like Southeast or South Asian backgrounds. And then I think there's also a piece around like reputation, like in Hindi, and if we've got any like Indian listeners, it's like this term called log kya kahenge, which means like, what will other people think of us? And so I think it's almost like, it's seen as like a sign of like laziness, weakness, it's almost like you're being possessed, that you're feeling anxious. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So that reminds me of how in our culture as well, it's all about saving face. Yeah, the reputation is huge, because exactly.
Saving face is a huge thing.
Especially in Asian countries, because everyone usually comes from like a really collective, I guess it's quite a collective society, right? So what you do in your family is going to have a ripple effect on the rest of your family. And so everyone just wants to, you know, save their reputation. And yeah, what you just said, I think that really resonated with how we grew up as well.
Yeah, just to add to that as well, I think like, I almost feel like mental health is very much like hidden behind like a lot of the Southeast Asian values, like of you know, family connection and, you know, connection with others and being that, you know, that gracious host and creating that, you know, that type of community type feelings. I think it really goes back to an example that one of my mates had. He went back to Bangladesh and for a couple of months, and he said, you know, there was not one moment where he felt sad or unhappy, because there were constantly people coming out. There was a very massive like connection of between him and his family and all of his family friends and all of his people that are very close around him. And I think that might be one of the reasons why, obviously there are other reasons, but that may be one of the reasons why, you know, mental health really isn't spoken about, because, you know, there's just that much family connection there that, like, you know, it's hard to, you know, be in a position where you've experienced any sort of mental health related issues. But again, like, I think that's just one example, and it's obviously not, there's no sort of prudence to what I'm saying, but, I think like that could genuinely be a factor where, like, you know, it's just really not spoken about. And sort of on that education stuff as well, like, you know, I think a lot within Southeast Asian culture, like a lot of what someone's worth is very much dictated by their academic results and how they fit in within the educational kind of ranking. I think like, yeah, that just the amount of, like, looking back at like some of the people within India as well, and like in the Indian educational system, it is super, super competitive. I mean, you've got 1 billion people. It's a population of 1 billion people. You've got like millions and millions of students like fighting for X number of positions in it within a university. It's just incredibly, incredibly stressful. And I feel like if you were to tell your parents about the mental health issues that you're going through, it's sort of seen as a bit of an excuse. Like,
there's no space or capacity for them to focus on anything other than their studies. Or
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's just like, you know, the parents would just say, "Jao pani pilo," which means like, go and drink water, you'll be fine kind of thing. Right. It's like, it's just like,
suffering depression, just go for a walk.
Yeah, exactly. Get a blood test. Right. No, exactly. Yeah, go for a blood test and get your vitamin D check. That's pretty much what the conversation is. Like, it's very, that's very much like limited to that. So it's just like, yeah, it's a very much a cultural. It goes back to the idea of, you know, it being a very much a cultural issue as much as it being a medical issue as well.
Yeah, there's like a really, I don't know if you guys have also seen this, but like this idea around like intergenerational trauma, like the trauma that our parents and grandparents have gone through, like that gets flowed down like sort of the chain. I don't know too much about history, not really my wasn't my forte. I think I failed a couple of tests back in my day in history, but like some, like at least Indian history and like the partition and everything that, you know, people in like India and Pakistan have gone through, our grandparents were very much at the center of that in some capacity. And I think a lot of that trauma, whether it be like anxiousness or whatever it might be, really gets projected. So even though you haven't necessarily like directly experienced it, it very much gets projected down into our genetics and the way we are, whether we're pessimistic or optimistic. I think some of that has like quite an important role to play, because trauma very much affects behavior.
Yeah, I feel it from my end as well, from a Vietnamese background. Like, my parents were like running away from war and shit like that. I can see, because like for them, they're all fighting for their survival. And even though right now they're at a comfortable stage where they don't have to worry about that anymore, they still kind of project those feelings of like anxiety and, you know, stress and stuff that they faced during those wartime periods into, you know, their days and lives now, even though they're not facing that anymore. And that, like, we can feel that too. And then maybe perhaps subconsciously I project that sort of intergenerational trauma off into, you know, the people around me and like into my life and stuff. So definitely feel that.
If you fancy yourself a sweet, refreshing treat, our lovely friends at Scoopy, Melbourne's go-to bingsu joint, are offering our listeners a cheeky 15% off all their orders at their two stores. They have one in the heart of Melbourne on Guildford Lane and in Glen Waverley.
So just use the code UA15 at the checkout for 15% off. Please note the offer is subject to change, so remember to check in each episode for the fresh new code. Woo! Thanks, Scoopy. We love y'all.
Yeah, no, completely agreed. You guys would have heard like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like at the base level, you've got like,
kind of reaching towards the top of the triangle now. So our worries are different, but
No, but like even like, you know, how it's like all those physiological things at the bottom of the pyramid, which are very much like food, air, shelter, water, whatever it might be. And then as you go up that list, it becomes more psychological in nature.
Yeah.
I honestly feel like those things that our society values in terms of like, yeah, I don't know, like getting a job or whatever it might be, which provide the food, air, shelter and water.
Mm.
Getting a job and all those other things actually depend on our mental health. Like our mental health needs to be in a good place for us to even go to work each day and like contribute to society. And that's what in turn provides that food, air, shelter, water, whatever it might be. And so I feel like the discussion needs to be that actually mental health needs to be placed as a sort of like a basic necessity in the same way food, air, shelter, water is, because that's what actually contributes to like a thriving society and a thriving life.
Someone call up Maslow.
Yeah, literally.
You feel shit wrong.
Maslow, bro, we've got an addition.
So it's getting through.
Not gonna be a pyramid anymore.
But yeah, anyways, get the blood test.
Get the blood
make sure you have enough vitamin D.
Get that vitamin D up, man. Come on. Get that sun. That's very good. Very good, Sonny. Like, I never knew you had this this thought in you. It's very good to learn about. This is the first time.
Yeah, me neither.
No? He just came up with it on the spot.
It's interesting. There's quite a few takes on it, because I think it very much depends on like perception and the way we perceive things. Like, goes back to your point earlier, Mank, like with what Ash Judd said about like it's your choice to live like a thriving life. And so a lot of the things that have sort of been set in stone in history and like all these things that we've been taught, we can flip that around. Like, it doesn't have to be that way.
Nothing to add from me. I think that was great from Sunny. Nothing to add from me, I'm sorry.
Actually, I just wanted to like touch on something real quick. So you guys were talking, well, Sunny, you mentioned how now you're having these more open conversations with your brother. That's amazing. And I guess a lot of the conversations that we are having are with our friends. But are you guys having this sort of conversations with your family as well in terms of like your parents?
Yeah, he's just like shaking his head intensely.
Like, he's shaking his head. He's like, nope. So, you know, we were like cracking jokes and shit before about how our parents tell us, you know, just get some vitamin D, go for a walk, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I would love to be able to openly express myself to my parents as well. And I think a lot of people who are our age or people who have parents who have that, I guess, traditional mindset, would you have any tips on how to kind of navigate those conversations with them for them to become more open and them to assist them in learning the languages and understanding that mental health is a thing and it is not, you're not crazy for feeling certain ways and stuff like that. But yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do we start those conversations with our parents, per se?
Yeah, that's a can of worms, I reckon. I think like it goes back to like, was I think Sunny and I and Ujwala as well have had this conversation many times, and I think it goes back to this point, like the cultural aspect, like was we know within Bottled Up specifically, like with our conversations and our mission, like we know that change is not going to happen overnight. Everything in life takes time. And we know that, like, you know, if we release one podcast, you know, but we're not going to overnight change, you know, the tide of mental health that's been going on that's been festering for like, you know, thousands and thousands of years. We know that's not going to happen, right? Everything takes time, it takes persistence, and it takes consistency. So I think, like, in particular, I don't really have a tip because I'm not really living by these values. But I think, just, you know, over time, I think one thing you need to realize is that your parents just literally just want what's best for you. And that's a consistent across every single parent. You know, they love you no matter what, right? So it's about, you know, the first time you speak to them about your own like mental health, if you're having mental health issues, you know, it might not go well down the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be overnight where it's going to be like, okay, like this is what's, it's like, I'm assuming that these conversations in, from their perspective, they've never had these types of conversations. So just, you know, having the first conversation one night is not going to be, you know, it's not going to change much of their mindset. So I think over time and repetition and consistency, you know, things will change. And, you know, at the end of the day, just sort of go back to that fact that, you know, at the end of the day, your parent, your mom, your dad, they love you no matter what. And they genuinely want what's best for you. And, you know, over time they'll come around and they'll understand a bit more about your own situation. And it kind of goes back to like, you know, what Sunny was mentioning about, you know, that whole intergenerational trauma, because I always see myself, I'm a very anxious person. I feel like I get that from my mum. I feel like my mum is very, very anxious. And also my grandmother is also very, very anxious as well. Like the smallest things like set them off. So like, I think if you were to potentially like, you know, open up to your parents, I think you'd be pleasantly surprised in that, you know, like your values and your emotions and your way of thinking is actually, you know, filtered down from your parents. and understanding that connection, it goes a long way into having those types of conversations.
Yeah, I really like what you said about being understanding of your parents as well. And I think when we were, angsty teens growing up and, we'd bring up stuff with our parents and we'd just say things like, oh, you just don't understand. Or like, we'd say, oh, it's not fair. Like, why can't you be like this? Or why can't you just be more open? Because I guess when we consume media, right, we see these dads and mums that are just like so open and willing to have those types of conversations, and you're like, oh, why isn't that not happening in my household? But then I think over time you learn to realize that, okay, our parents have gone through certain circumstances to get us to where we are today. We need to be a bit more empathetic and understanding about why they might not be able to fully grasp the different concepts that we can, because we have Instagram where we can, look at these nice posts that make mental health a lot more accessible for us, right? Whereas with our parents, it's like they're not exposed to that type of language, as you've touched on before, or that toolkit. So, I like what you said about being more empathetic and understanding of their position as well.
And I think on that point as well, it's like, I feel like a lot of it, and it boils down to your choices as well. Because, like, I feel like it with me, I feel like I can, like, my parents, from my parents' perspective, mum and dad's perspective, I feel like if I were to tell them about my situation, they'd be very open to it. But I think mine is just my choice to sort of keep it within myself, because I don't want to worry them and like, even with Bottled Up and stuff, like, they're very much like listening to a lot of the podcasts. They've been very, very supportive. Dad, mate, absolutely loves.
Yeah, Sachin and Anjali, consistent likes on our LinkedIn and Instagram. So shout out to them.
Sach loves it. And just like, yeah, so I think it's very much internally within me, like whether I'm sort of ready to actually speak to them about it, or I'm not sure if it's the same with you, Sunny, as well. But I think for example, like even my family back in India, they have no idea what mental health is. Like, they have absolutely no idea. They follow the Instagram page, which is great for the followers, but I don't think, like, they fully comprehend, like, what we're trying to do. it's like apples and oranges. Like, it's like, it just doesn't exist.
I agree with Mayank. Like, I think mum would be quite open to when I do share things, but I think it's from within. Like, am I ready to share? And I think that's probably the hard part. So, one thing I've been, and I still don't think I'm doing this too great of a job. I don't know if anyone's got parents like this, but mum is always kind of like, what do you want to eat? Like, that's probably the most prominent question throughout the day, as opposed to like, oh, what did you get up to? Or like, what's on for the day and stuff. It's kind of like, what do you want to eat? And when will you be home to eat again? really, really caring mother. I don't think it's part of her vernacular to, necessarily ask like, oh, like, what did you get up to this morning? And like, how do you feel? Mm-hmm. Like, and so I think part of the onus is on me to share snippets of my own day. And I think that kind of makes it a bit easier for the other person as well. I'm not great at it, but I think, especially, when we're coming from school, like back in like year 12 or high school days and stuff, we kind of just want to go straight to our room and just like do our own thing. But I think for those that are listening and are in high school, like, our parents generally do care and love us for who we are and what we do. And I think if we can just share small snippets just out of our own volition, I think that makes it a lot easier for them to process and understand, things that are going on in your life. So
it's conditioning.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
Pavlov's dog, guys.
bit of bell action, yeah.
Yeah, that's so true, because it's kind of like, just because they don't ask doesn't mean they don't give a shit. Unless you tell them, they straight up tell you, like, I don't give a shit. Then it's like, okay, I've got a sign. That's a bit different. All right, you don't care. But yeah, like, if you want to tell them about your day or you would like them to ask, don't expect that they're going to ask in the first place, but take that first step, ask. Keep telling them about your day, and then they'll get to a point where they'll be like, oh my gosh, she hasn't told me about her day. What is going on? I'm going to ask. How was your day? And then it's damn, got you.
Even on that as well, it's like, again, we've spoken about this before. It's like, are you okay day is obviously a very important day for mental health. And there's so many more like ways that you can say, are you okay, without saying the words, are you okay? Like, from our parents' perspective, they could just be asking, how's your day at school? Like, that's a very sort of common question. That could potentially be their way of saying, or giving us opportunity to be like, okay, like, what's actually going on? Like, it could just be like, one of those things where they're not directly asking you, how are you? Are you okay? They sort of just want to sort of just ignite any sort of like conversation with you, especially in those pubescent years. Like when you just want, yeah. when you want to sort of, you just want to go up to your room and just sit there and go on your phone.
Slam the door.
Listen to angsty music.
Yeah.
No, 100%. Yeah. It's even like when Twee and I were talking about this, where like we would be working, you know, working from home. I'm sure you guys also have experienced it, where you know you work into the PMs instead of just, you know, the AMs. And
God, I hope I'm not working to the AMs, girl.
And you know, when your parents come in and check in on you, and they might like carry a plate of fruit in there, or they might say, oh, I know my parents would say, oh, don't work too hard. And like, it's just those types of things where you're like, okay, they actually do really care about my well-being and my mental health. But as we've touched on with this conversation, it's just having the same language is just not always there, but it doesn't mean that they don't care. It doesn't mean that they don't love you as much as yeah, it's just about reflecting on it and appreciating that, you know, like appreciating that they're always, they care about you. You know,
it's just their way of showing it, I guess, is sometimes different to the way we show it.
And also for us as well, it's like, I think we have a role to play when it comes to asking our parents how they are, or our siblings,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like Sunny, you touched on before how like you're starting those conversations with your brother and you're being more conscious about making it a thing and being more present. Like sometimes I think our lives move so fast that we forget that, you know, our parents have feelings and they've gone through stuff at work or throughout their day as well. So just asking and checking in on them to see how they are opening the doors to those conversations really makes a difference in the long term.
I have been trying to do that recently, like asking those sort of questions, like, Mom, how are you feeling today? And it feels so fucking weird. It feels so foreign and uncomfortable. It's just like, what the fuck am I even saying? And then sometimes she gives me, like the first few times I asked her that, she gave me this like weird ass look. She's like, what the fuck is wrong with you, girl? You okay? Like, why are you asking me this sort of shit? And it just... I felt like she probably felt like I was like violating her or something by asking these like personal weird questions. And she was really thrown back. But now, like, the more I ask, she's not going to ignore me every single time. Yeah. I can see, like, she, you know, she's starting to open up a little bit. And same with my dad as well.
Do you guys feel like you could like open up more to like a particular parent? Like, do you guys feel like you can identify more to your mum or your dad?
I personally think I can open up to my mum a bit more. So mum came over when she was 4, so I guess language barrier isn't as of a big thing, or even cultural barrier isn't as a huge thing as it is with my dad. How about you, Twee?
I would say my mum she has more room for empathy. My dad is quite an empathetic person as well, but he is deeply rooted in the whole toxic masculinity thing. There are some things that I can't get past him, like, oh, you know, women should do this, men should do that. So when it comes to feelings, however, I know he has the capacity for empathy, but he chooses to ignore it because of toxic masculinity. So I tend to approach those more like emotion related conversations with my mum rather than my dad. Maybe you guys.
You've got both listeners, Mank.
Yeah. I feel like I open up to my friends more than my parents, actually. I don't know.
Oh, for sure.
I think for me, it's like, even when like the person that I see to talk about my stuff, like a psychologist, like I always feel like I can relate more to a female. So I think I think that's something that's within me. I just feel much more comfortable just talking about my emotions and all that stuff with a female psychologist. That's like my thing. I think that's just me. I don't really speak about this stuff with my mum or dad. But if I were, it would most likely be my mum, I think.
I'm probably the same. I think I'm like, I open up to my friends a lot more, or my partner as well. But then, yeah, like mum. Yeah, I think it's the fact that I don't really share much. Like the fact that I told her that I have a girlfriend, it was like a big deal. Like it was kind of like this thing I had built up in my head for like the last 22, 23 years. And then I told her, and then she was like, oh, like I'm keen to meet her. So it was quite well received.
What?
Yeah, it's just like, hang on a second. actually.
I thought I was going to get my ass beat.
My mom didn't believe me for the first day. She was just like, show me a photo. And then I showed her a photo. It's like, no, hang on a second. You're lying. And then...
Thanks for your confidence, mom.
she literally...
You think I can't pull chicks? Yeah.
So she actually just didn't believe me. And then... then obviously Harshdeep came over, and then it was kind of like, yeah, then like they both got along really, really well. And then mum's like, yeah, like you've done really well. So,
oh, good on you, Sunny. Yeah. Good on you.
So good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's probably just they're listening. Like, I think they understand. Like, mum tells me weird snippets of stories of like how she was like really cheeky growing up as well. Doesn't give away too many eggs, but says a few things like, oh, like I used to put on like a lot of makeup and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, good to know.
I feel like our parents were much more looser than we were. 100%. I reckon 100% they were much looser.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. My mum comes from a family of like 4 brothers, 5 sisters. And so it's like a massive family. And so yeah, like you can't be telling me that nothing went on there.
A lot of cheeky stories that you need to find out more about. It's not just the makeup, there's more cheek there.
it's golden.
On that lovely note, we always ask our guest this question because it really underpins the heart and soul of our podcast, which is what makes you both unapologetically Asian?
For me, when I was growing up, I don't think I was very proud of that. I don't think like I was more trying to fit into the mold. Like I went to a very kind of like white primary school. So if I didn't really want to be seen as like someone who's different, you know, even at the cricket, when I'd go to the cricket, a simple example is like, I'd always cheer for Australia. Like I'd be very embarrassed when like Australia plays India and then all the Indian fans would be like playing the dole and the drums and, I'd be very like embarrassed about that. But then I don't know, it's like overnight, it's like something switched. And you know, I think it was mainly when I sort of joined university, when I could really just sort of just like, you know, mingle with all people who are, you know, kind of ethically the same background as me, where like, you know, I became more proud of being and embracing that difference and being more proud of being Indian. So I'm not embarrassed now when I go to the cricket and I go and see the Indian drums. I actually get up around it. Very, very big fan of that. So, I think that in that way, I'm unapologetically Asian. Yeah, just embracing the culture. And it's a very kind of corny response. But, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, whatever Mayank said, copy and paste. And I'll take that as
yeah. So you feel that way when you go to the cricket as well? Bring your own drums? Or?
No, I think I was quite the same. Like I went to quite a white high school. Don't think I had any like maybe like one or two like Asian friends. Like a lot of them were like white, and I think that could have been by conscious design. And now like obviously going into uni and like meeting Mang, Ujwal, 30 others that are very similar to these two as well, like K-Shift.
copy paste.
Yeah, it's kind of been like a weird dichotomy. Like I think now like I'm quite motivated to learn like Hindi and Punjabi and like all these other aspects of my culture, which I kind of parked aside for a large portion of like the years that I've been growing up. So quite similar in that regard. So I think that's what makes me unapologetically Asian.
Yeah, Sunny, like when we're in high school, I feel like more than half my mates, in fact, if not all my mates, were pretty much like either Greek or like Australian.
Yeah,
and then like as soon as we went to like university, the first club I signed up to was Newark, which is the Melbourne University Indian Club. Like, and then literally like since then, like pretty much 100% of my mates are all like either Pakistani, Indian, Sri Lankan, Bangladeshi, like all of them are like very much the same cultural background. So we just naturally just gravitate towards those people, I feel. Yeah. So yeah, it's an interesting sort of relationship, yeah. Mm.
So we usually give the floor to our guests on the podcast to share their social media handles and where we can find more and learn more about Bottled Up. You guys, so...
Yep.
Where can we find y'all?
Well, on Instagram, on Linktree, on Facebook, on Twitter, on TikTok. Jokes.
Get on the TikToks. Come on. They're ticking the top.
On Instagram and Facebook, we're at Bottled Up Oz. I think Instagram is what we use probably the most. And then obviously we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, everything that redcircle.com offers us in terms of distribution. So you can find us there as well.
get around these lads. Give them a follow. Give them a subscribe. Give them a listen. They're great. High quality.
Thanks, you sound very enthusiastic. Yeah. Thank
you. You really sold us.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, just get around them. Get around the lads at Bottle Up.
Get around the boys. Get around the boys.
moving on to recommendation time. So this is the segment where we talk all about the movies, TV shows, and random shit that we've been consuming throughout the week. Mayank, start us off. What is your recommendation for the week?
Recommendation for the week. Ted Lasso on Apple TV.
Yes.
Such a good show. Obviously, firstly, Bottled Up is just a recommendation in itself, the Bottled Up podcast. But, Ted Lasso is such a good show. It's like, it touches on really progressive themes, and mental health is a very, very big element of it. And it's done in a very funny, casual, like it's one of those shows where you can just sort of just sit back and just fall asleep to. So yeah, and just turn your brain off and just put it to the side and just, you know, just take it in. So I think it's a very chill show, very important themes that it touches on. And yeah, Ted Lasso, get around it.
And Sunny, what about you? What are you recommending?
I've been watching, you guys know Ali Abdaal, the YouTuber who does like a lot of stuff on like productivity and like bunch of other things, just like life things in general. Like it's just like a lot of like cool things around like productivity. He has his own podcast where he just talks like quite openly about his life, like love life, relationships, building like startups and businesses. So it's, yeah,
sounds like a ripoff of UPA. Oh, UA, Unapologetically Asian. Aww. Yeah, sorry.
Guys, side note, Mayank just keeps calling Unapologetically Asian, which is two UPA. Words, UA. He keeps calling it UPA.
I don't know. It just has a ring to it. Like, Apologetically Asian, like, I don't know.
UPA.
UPA.
We should change our logo.
Yippee-yay-yay.
Yippee-yay-yay, mother.
That took a turn.
Have you seen Rambo? Okay, well, sorry. Whoops.
Anyway, sorry. Whoops. Sorry, Sunny. We just hijacked your recommendation.
Yeah, so that's a recommendation. Another recommendation. I don't know if you guys have read When Breath Becomes Air, the book.
Ooh, I haven't read it yet, but it is on my to read.
It is a ripper book about a neurosurgeon who breaks the book down into a life pre-diagnosis. And then post-diagnosis, it's kind of like a memoir and like it's a written book to like his young daughter, who I think he only got to see for a couple of months. But yeah, just really well written. They're really important themes around like hope, meaning, purpose, like all these things we pursue in like our world and like the value of that, I guess, because he's obviously someone who got diagnosed with cancer. And so there's only very few books that actually change your outlook or the way you see things. And that was one of the books. And I think there's a lot, it's quite a short book, like 130 or 140 pages, but like this guy like did literature at like Cambridge and then medicine at like Stanford. So it's like incredibly, yeah, like you need a dictionary. Smart like while book. You're reading it. Yeah, you need like a dictionary right next to you. So, yeah, it's a good book. Yeah, get around it.
Get around that. Thank you, Sunny. And what about you, Twee? What are you recommending?
I'm also recommending a book today as well. The book is called Norwegian Wood by Haruki Murakami. So the book follows the standpoint of one main character named Toru Watanabe. And it's just a short snippet of his early 20s where he kind of navigates his life post high school and his relationships with a few key characters and people important to his life, which you'll find out as you read. But yeah, I think what I really like about it is the simplicity, but also complexity of the book. The simplicity in the sense that the way Murakami writes, it's a very easy read because you don't really need to use your imagination that much, because the way he describes the setting and the characters' feelings and the environment that they're in, it's like he is able to convey in words exactly what the scene should look like and what it should feel like and the atmosphere in it. So in that sense, it's an easy read because you don't have to fill in the blanks with your imagination at all, which is what I really like about it. But then also it covers like really dark themes. Also trigger warning for people who aren't really comfortable with it, but it does cover things like suicide and death and all that. But he puts it in a kind of like a bit of a lighthearted way. Not really lighthearted, yeah, kind of like a lighthearted way. It's just fun to read and yeah, it's just an interesting book overall. So would recommend that.
Awesome.
And last but not least, Tiana, what is your recommendation for today?
Okay, guys. I never, ever, ever thought that I would recommend this, but I'm recommending Nike Running Club. So it is an app that has coached runs on it. Why are you shaking your head, man?
No, Strava. Strava's where it's at.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, I'm getting to that. I'm getting to that. Just don't hijack my recommendation. Oh, I'm kidding. Okay, so Nike Running Club in conjunction with Strava. Okay, so for the last 2 weeks, I've actually been running consistently every single day, apart from one day rest, which is huge for me. This is huge because if anyone knows me, they know that I'm not incredibly fit when it comes to running. So I've been really working on that, and I've found a lot of value out of running. Actually, it's really helping with, I guess, staying positive throughout working from home and breaking up the day a lot, which is something that I love. And just having that, you know, 20 to 30 minutes where it's just myself, Coach Bennett in my ear, and my Spotify playlist. It's awesome because I really recommend this app for beginners, because if you don't know things about, you know, your form, your pace, your breathing, that type of thing, the coach actually really, you know, has that conversation with you so that you understand and get to know your body and get to know what it's like to run. And so, yeah, that's been great. And then also Strava has been awesome as well. Just, you know, love the kudos. Follow me on Strava, guys. It's counting you in. And and I'll see you on there.
So Strava's another app, right?
Strava's, sorry, I should have.
It's two recommendations.
Should have explained. Okay. So Nike Running Club is so that you can have those coached runs and get into that. But then also Strava is a social media app for fitness fanatics, you'd say, would you? So whether you're running, walking, swimming, cycling, whatever activities you do, you can upload your activities onto there and then follow your friends. And it's a great way to keep yourself accountable. But I think it's also just, it's actually quite motivating as well to see other people do, you know, get out there and get active. It motivates yourself as well to get out there and get active. And then if you give people kudos and they give you kudos, it's also a bit of a, you know, pat on the back to keep going. But yeah, highly recommend. Get out there and get fit, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening to this very insightful conversation with the lads from Bottled Up. We hope that you have learnt a thing or two and enjoyed also listening to us roast each other. It's always a pleasure, never a chore. So thank you so much for listening and for your support. If you did enjoy the podcast, please remember to, you know, give it a share, give it a like, and you can give us a review if you are on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, and you can also find us on social media as well, of course. We're mainly on Instagram, and our handle is unapologetically
AZN.
Yes, and we also have a website as well, so you can check us out at www.unapologeticallyasian.com.au, where you can find a list of our episodes as well as a list of our sponsors. And if you are interested in a potential partnership with us, please reach out to us on there. There's a contact form that you can fill out, and then we'll get back to you ASAP. But yeah, it's been a lovely conversation. We hope that you guys are very well wherever you are in the world, and we will catch you guys in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.